Welcome to the Drop-In CEO podcast. I'm Deb Coviello, and as the Drop-In CEO, I drop into businesses and assume the CEO role to enhance the human element and increase the results they achieve. This podcast is about bringing you conversations with expert guests who have achieved their greatest results built on a strong foundation of purpose, values, and elevating people. If you're a business leader, entrepreneur, or even just getting started in business, join us as we build the skills you need to achieve your goals. Hello, and welcome to the Drop-In CEO podcast. My name's Deb Coviello, and I'm excited to introduce to you today Dr. Stanley J. Ward. Dr. Stanley J. Ward is an accomplished leadership coach and educator. His clients have included high potentials, vice presidents, C-level leaders, and business owners in both for-profit and nonprofit settings, including aerospace and defense, design, manufacturing, and sales organizations. Since 2011, he has used 360 feedback and other assessments to help leaders maximize their strengths and correct liabilities, often using the ProSci-ADCAR model to ensure the awareness and desire, knowledge, ability, and reinforcements are there for sustainable change. He's also the co-editor of Ethical Leadership and author of How to Beat Burnout for Yourself, Your Family, and Your Team. It's my honor. This is going to be a great conversation. Welcome to the show, Stanley.
Thanks, Deb. I'm so glad to be here.
All right. So first of all, you're going to find he has a mesmerizing voice. If you haven't gotten his book, you absolutely have to get his book. If there's an audio equivalent, you've got to listen to the audio. When he tells his stories, when he shares his insights, his voice is mesmerizing and it's full of insight. So selfish me, I said, this is a person I have to bring onto the show and he's going to share some amazing wisdom. Stan, I would love for you to share for our listeners a little bit about your business journey and anything that you want about yourself and also the work that you do now to help others.
Sure. I think the simplest summary is to call me a leadership educator because I'm definitely cut from that teacher cloth, motivated to serve. I call myself a growth junkie. I like to see people grow and change. And as far as the business journey for me, I've realized that the people I want to help most are the leaders who care deeply about both people and productivity or profit. First, it might sound like, well, duh, of course you should care about that. And you're right, you should. But wow, there is a different kind of burden on the leader that genuinely sees people as having inherent human value as well as the need to keep on the lights and fulfill the mission of the organization. That's a lot to manage. And so people who are feeling that weight, I want to be an advocate for them, an ally for them, and support them in any way I can, whether it's through the books, classes I teach, the coaching I do, the workshops I do, webinars, whatever it is, I want to support those leaders.
So you talk about the burden or the weight of such leaders, the more successful leaders, I would actually have to say, that bear the burden of having to lead through humans first, as well as keeping the lights on. So I'd love to unpack that a little bit because it is hard. I mean, I know for myself, I had been a leader that was very tactical and let's get the work done. I know a lot of leaders that say, yes, let me worry about the vision, but nose down, get the work done. And we are missing so much. So, I mean, help me to unpack that a little bit about how can we get these leaders to, you know, focus on humans first?
Yeah, there's a lot of pieces to that. Okay. I'm a big believer in the idea of assumptions are important and that we need to pay attention to our attention. So if I'm only assuming that value is in certain metrics, right, certain outcomes, and if I'm only paying attention to those things, then that's going to impact how I relate to my people. And at a certain point, you may just see them as blips on a spreadsheet. And again, that leader is not one I want to work with because I find it just very frustrating. The world, it's not getting any bigger, yet our population is. We live in, and of course, we're recording this when we're in the middle of this COVID stuff and the fallout to the economy. And golly, I think about leaders I've worked with who have done everything humanly possible to keep people on the payroll, again, while also keeping lights on and making the mission happen. I've seen them bear the burden of those decisions, and they've done well. I'm convinced that leadership does have an ethical piece to it. And when I say ethical, I don't mean just not breaking the law, right? I mean, that 2008 financial crisis, there were people that caused great harm that didn't necessarily break any laws. I'm going to say that wasn't ethical leadership.
You know, it's really important to recognize that we've got all different kinds of leaders. I mean, that's how we've been trained. Sometimes we've been trained because it is about the bottom line and it is about business. But, you know, there is this awakening and realization that maybe we hire humans to do products and services. But what if we focused on not only helping leaders to say we are managing humans? And if we manage humans in the right way, by first even focusing on yourself, we actually get better results in the end. So I think that's a great message. And I love the work that you do with these leaders. Somebody had actually given you a referral or a reference, and you've got some tremendous references as testimonials to the work that you've done. But back in April, somebody said this, and I found it really fantastic. Dr. Ward doesn't teach you how to become a great leader. He teaches you how to embrace and acknowledge who you are. And so I'd love for you to share a little more about that and your style.
Yeah. Well, you said something really good in the lead up to this, which is about that learning to lead self and then learning to lead others. You know, one of the things that I see is, and of course, we talk about this in the emotional intelligence literature, but the importance of being self-aware. The folks I work with, often the first thing we do is simply help them become aware of when they're emotionally activated, when they're in that fight or flight space, so that they can calm themselves and be an intentional leader with whether they're making a decision by themselves or whether they're sitting across from someone and giving them feedback, or whether they're in front of their board and needing to lead that meeting to, or at least hoping to lead that meeting to a certain conclusion. In all those spaces, there are skills to help us become aware, to settle ourselves so that we can lead well. Regarding the comments that you were sharing, I am convinced that all leaders have strengths, weaknesses, and liabilities that are unique to that leader. And so part of the journey is to figure out, okay, what are your true strengths? Those things that you can rely on under pressure, those things that give you energy, so you can have the energy needed to be leaders, because frankly, it takes a lot of energy to do leadership. And then let's look and say, okay, what are the liabilities? And the difference between a liability and a weakness is liabilities are those things that keep you from accomplishing your mission. Weaknesses are simply those things that are less than ideal. And so learn to make peace with the weaknesses, because otherwise they will rob you of energy that you need in order to correct the liabilities, to maximize the strengths so that you can lead well, lead with intentionality, and help both people and organization achieve the purpose.
It's a balancing act, and sometimes people can feel overwhelmed. Yes, I know I'm good at public speaking. I love project management, but I don't like doing, you know, the creative work. But I've got this weakness, and business tells you, well, you got to really fix that weakness. And the liability, sometimes we don't even talk about the liability. So I love the work that you do to help people really reflect upon them and actually kind of leverage all of them and promote and demote to get the proper balance in their performance and awareness.
Yeah. If I may build on that, regarding some of the weaknesses and the liabilities, one of the great things that I teach folks is when you know what those are, one of the ways you can correct them is bring other people into your life that have those skills. Like you were talking, it may be marketing. Again, for me, I do some work with the Gallup StrengthsFinder material, right? So I'm always looking for people who have woo, because I'm more on the strategic side of things. And I love to build relationships with folks where I say, hey, you've got this strength and this gift. I've got this strength and this gift. Let's figure out how we can bring them together so we can make the mission happen. And then you're building community. And that's that human leadership space that I love to operate in. If I may, so previous to all this work as a leadership educator, I was a high school history and English teacher. I taught humanities. And I learned in graduate school that the basic difference between a comic story and a tragic story was not that one is funny and the other is sad. It's that comic stories end in community, tragic stories end in isolation. My concern for the leader who is just operating by the spreadsheet, who's not concerned about that human connection, is their stories can easily end in tragedy.
That so much resonates with me because I also have been in a couple amazing careers, amazing jobs, but there came a time and point where it was kind of a rat race, working by the spreadsheet, working extra hours to get all of the tasks done. and you kind of lost sight of the bigger picture. And at the end of the day, it was tragic only because it would take a toll on yourself mentally, physically, to a point where you just couldn't perform anymore. Maybe you just weren't a good human, even in your family and your community. So I love where you go to a place of just try to frame it out and don't have a tragic situation, but use laughter. Laughter, I've heard this mentioned multiple times. Laughter is a stress reliever. Laughter is something that can maybe just put some positive energy even behind the worst of circumstances.
Yeah, and I think it's easy to get into these toxic office cultures when you are in that isolating space, because the behaviors, the transparency, the communication needed to have a healthy office culture isn't happening.
So at these times when we're going through economic changes, our world is changing because of the COVID, and I don't often talk about the pandemic because I'm an optimist. I always look at the opportunities of what could I be doing more of now during this time where maybe I physically cannot connect with people, et cetera. But I want to talk about the positive here. So you have authored a book about how to beat burnout for yourself, your family, and your team. And you have to go to those places to understand what causes it and then how to come out of it. I would love to know more about the impetus for writing the book, but what are the biggest ahas or things that you bring into the book, obviously without giving away all the great work that you do with individuals?
Well, I would say the impetus is my own struggle with it. I am also one of those leaders who cares deeply, works really hard. I have some hangups about goal achievement. I think we've talked about this before, where I'm kind of like a pole vaulter. And as I'm on my way up and I'm about to get over the pole, I'll look at it and think, well, gosh, if I can get over it, maybe this isn't challenging enough. And so it's like I'm holding onto the pole with one hand and reaching out to the bar with the other and trying to raise it higher so I can really achieve something. Okay, yeah, so that's a recipe for disaster. What's interesting is I find that a lot of the leaders I work with have similar personalities. And yeah.
I'm one of them. I'm your subject.
Yeah. And so, golly, how do you manage that? And again, if we're genuinely concerned about our relationships with people, if we're not careful, that self-flagellation we can get into with this goal achievement stuff, it's going to bleed all over our organizations. Because I know that's part of my setup and part of the way I'm wired. And because I've seen myself both achieve great things in organizations and completely exhaust myself to the point of having some serious health issues. And the book tells some of those stories. I'm just using my experiences alongside with the research I've done, both related to burnout specifically, as well as a PhD in leadership studies. And then all this coach training I've got to help folks who are prone to that, avoid it. Let's be proactive. What we know about burnout is it's a spectrum. Everybody's on the spectrum somewhere. Let's be proactive to make sure you're moving in a healthy space. So burnout, so these issues at worst are weaknesses and not liabilities.
So what's been your most stressful or difficult situation where you had to bring somebody out of place of burnout or potential burnout and move them through a place? I mean, I'd love to know a story about how you've done that, because I know you're amazingly successful, but sometimes we can learn from some of the lessons and challenges that you have had, and then maybe we can apply some of that to how we work.
Yeah, well, awareness is where it all starts.
Okay.
And that's that ADKAR model. I would say that the biggest train wreck I've had in this work is a person who essentially we were doing the 360 and none of his direct reports would complete the document.
Wow.
Yeah. And so, you know, I asked him, I said, hey, and you know, total coach mode, I'm being open-ended, non-threatening, doing the Dr. Stan thing. Hey, so what do you think of that? And I mean, he just blew up. I don't know what this is. I have the best relationships with my direct reports. Of course, they'd moved him out of this management position because of these problems. It's the vice president's fault. It's the HR department's fault. It's the da, 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 da. Guess what? That coaching relationship went nowhere and it was not successful, right? Because there was no awareness of what was going on.
You know, I'd love to add to that, because I also, in my readings and learning, so first you have to have the awareness that, okay, something is not going right. But then there's the personal accountability, because yes, you could always point the fingers about they're that way, they're this way, they don't understand, though they've always been that way. I've read a book, it was, I think, about Navy SEALs, about taking personal accountability. You own everything, all the decisions, and all of the outcomes. And when you start from a mindset there, that if you're not getting the result that you want, the buck stops with you. And so then what are those things, once you have the awareness, what is in your control? And when you start showing up differently or having different behaviors, the results start coming and they manifest in the people that you work with. So I love where you start, awareness, but I like to add accountability as well.
Yeah. And with that, again, we're really getting into that desire space, the AD of the ad car, right? What do you care to take action on? Okay, you're aware of this. What do you care about? In this particular case, the person was neither aware nor they cared. and so, again, there was no movement on that. We're talking about, to circle back to burnout and some of these COVID coaching conversations I've been having, really, I've been drawing on Stephen Covey's work and 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, which, by the way, I read as a college student in 1991, and it just was like, oh, this is so cool. And because I'm a reader, I kept reading about paradigms. I couldn't figure out what a paradigm was, paradigm, but because he talks so much about paradigms, and I'd never seen that word before. But he does talk about that circle of influence versus circle of concern, right? And to the extent that you can match up the things that you're worried about paying attention to the things that you're actually able to take action on, now you're setting yourself up for success. And I think that's one of the biggest things that we're seeing in this season is the leaders that I'm working with, at least, who are able to match those circles are doing well. The ones who are just staring at this area of concern that are worries that they can't take control on, the larger economy, the larger health issues, things like that, those things are spinning them up into this fight or flight space to where they're not able to be effective. And so for them, I have concern. And if you are a leader in that situation, I would say the first thing to do is allow yourself to sit, allow yourself to do the belly breathing exercises that we see so much being recommended on the internet, right? Where we take the deep breath in for a count of three, take it all the way down into the gut, exhale for a count of four, because what that does is it helps reset the brain systems that are going on there. We're talking about the sympathetic and parasympathetic system. It will help you move out of the fight or flight space. We know that the hormones that are released in that fight or flight space, they may take 20 minutes just to get to their half-life. And so if we're sitting there constantly staring at this stuff we can't control and worrying about it, I mean, you're going to be stuck for a long time.
So Stan, I'd love to share a quick story. And this is about me being more aware and in the moment. I'm having a Groundhog Day moment. Do you know about 2 hours ago, I interviewed somebody, Ron Foglia, who also took me through a 60-second breathing exercise while we were recording. And oh my goodness, how I felt so aware and calm afterwards. And I would definitely advocate for that, because it will take whatever stress or incident in the moment is causing you distress. And it actually, for a moment, short circuits it a little bit. It brings it down so then you can start thinking more rationally, or maybe thinking with more positive emotions. So powerful.
It allows us to take a moment and pause and then take meaningful action. And when we take meaningful action, then that also helps that brain chemistry go into a much more positive space. And it gives us, again, the energy and the sense of accomplishment needed to do the hard things.
So let's talk about positive experiences. Who is your ideal client? And maybe an example of where they had all the pieces that you needed to help bring them to a better place.
Well, okay. It's hard for me to talk about just one ideal client. I am a very blessed fella in that I get to work with some really neat people.
Cool.
And I often tell people when I come into the organization, you work for a great organization or I wouldn't be here, because otherwise I'm just seen as an expense. And so people are willing to invest in you. Some of the things I love to see are especially folks from underrepresented communities who are in these leadership spaces, and often they deal with that imposter syndrome and things of that nature. And to help them move past that, golly, I mean, it almost just brings me to tears, because again, for some of these folks, we're talking about generations of setback and poverty and you know, they've worked so hard to get to where they are, and to finally help them break through this thing that's holding them back, and to think about how that's going to impact their family, how that impacts the community as they see these role models. I got to get a little teary-eyed. It just means the world to me. And anytime I work with a leader, again, like some of the leaders I've been sitting with as we've gone through this COVID space, who's saying, okay, let me back up. You want to know what a value is? This corporate speak stuff is crap. A value is something you're willing to make a sacrifice for. And so when organizations bring me in and they say, hey, let's talk about our core values, my first response is, okay, tell me what this value has cost you, and then I'll tell you if it's really a value or not. If it's cost you nothing, it's just corporate speak. And by the way, your people see it, and this is the reason they don't trust you, or maybe one of several reasons.
I love how you break this down, because you have to maybe be that objective outsider to say if what you're doing, the values, the characteristics, or behaviors are not serving you. You kind of break it open and help them to realize, you're right. We need to have a different culture. We need to have a different awareness in how we operate with our people. I need to reflect on what truly are my values and see if it's connected to the greater good.
Exactly. And to the extent that the values of your organization and your core values, your personal values overlap, that's a good setup. That's a happy space. And so often one of the first exercises I'll do with clients is look at, okay, what are those core values that animate you? Let's prioritize them. Let's evaluate how well you're actually living those out. Again, my PhD dissertation was actually on storytelling as a leadership tool. And part of that was this idea that if you can't provide stories for me of how you've lived out your core values, guess what? They're not values. This is just talk.
Or you haven't lived a really fulfilling life, because stories are what you create, what you experience, and they just explain who you are and how you show up in the world.
And the heart of a story is conflict, by the way. If there's no conflict, you don't really have a story. You're just talking. And so again, that's where values are so important, because those are the things that help us make the hard decisions and do the hard things when we're in the conflict situations. Conflict is not the universe picking on you. It's you living a story.
So this has been almost the perfect interview, because we're kind of bouncing all over the place, but at the same time, we make complete sense. So you just talked about conflict, and I noticed on your website, you have about 5 or 6 different offerings, but one of the things you talk about is working on unnecessary conflict. But I'm curious, because so often they say conflict is a place sometimes where it's good, and if you lean into it, you can really understand deep root causes for why people may not be able to operate. We teach people on conflict resolution, but then you talk about unnecessary conflict. Tell me more about that.
Yeah, well, so I operate with a model from the Thomas Kielman Conflict Mode Inventory that I'm a big fan of, and find it to be very helpful for building awareness for my individual clients and the teams that I coach. And essentially, that model says there's 2 dynamics in any conflict communication situation. There is concern for self and concern for the other. Okay. So I translate that to say there's my agenda and there's your agenda, or there's my needs and there's your needs. The unnecessary conflict is conflict that happens because we're not clear on those 2 items. And so the first step for you as an individual leader, as you're going into that board meeting, as you're going into the performance review, as you're going into, gosh, as you're going home. Because by the way, the coaching I offer, part of the value add is it is the things you need to be successful both at work and home. As you're going into those spaces, what do I need here? I've got to get clear on it. And I was having a coaching conversation with a client this morning who said, who's actually coming back to a home issue. And he said, I know this isn't work related, but can we go here? I'm like, yeah, man, let's do this. And part of the problem was a conflict with a spouse because there was no space to communicate on both parties what they needed to accomplish. And so the coaching assignment was just simply have that conversation. Get clear on what you need, get clear on what they need, and stop. Don't do anything else. If you just do that, that's a win today.
Wow. And I'm very curious here. So what priority do you give to each? I get it. You know, be very clear on what you need. I often coach my people to say, if you're going into a situation, even if you have to write it on an index card, we still use index cards, what it is you want, because you can kind of get messed up in the moment. But then we also talk about having empathy for the other person, putting yourself in their shoes, seek to understand, which is the priority. I'm actually getting a little confused.
So I believe they both have equal value or equal weight.
Yeah.
There is a negotiation that has to happen.
Yes.
We're going to help others without hurting ourselves. And so essentially, here are my needs, here are your needs, here are the constraints we're working in. And by the way, this is why Thomas Kilman's model is so great, because my needs, your needs, I win, you win. Yeah, that's the highly collaborative communication style. It's not always appropriate or an option. If you're short on time, you're gonna have to go to a different space.
Absolutely.
Times that the highly directive, assertive style or competitive style is totally appropriate. When the building's on fire, we don't need to take a vote. There are times that the avoiding style is appropriate. After 9 o'clock at night in the ward house, we know we don't talk about contentious things because it's not going to end well. We will avoid this until tomorrow and then we'll revisit it so that we're in a healthier space. And accommodating is going to be appropriate, especially if you're in customer service. There are times when it's totally appropriate to say, you know what, your needs, we're going to take care of your needs. My needs, we're not going to so much worry about right now. The danger is if we're always operating in that space, and some of the leaders I work with, because they're really motivated towards servant leadership, they're accommodating all the time. Well, guess what? If you're always in that space and you're never clear on your needs and you're not communicating those, you will learn to resent the people you work with and resent your organization.
Powerful. Pause. And we're going to move in another direction. So we see these issues. Your services can help people that maybe have been in business for some time and a lot of great experience. And yes, they're stressed, they're burnt out, or maybe they've no longer functioning with human-centric values. But let's think about somebody who's up and coming in their career. They're go-getters. They've got that pole vault. They want to go higher and higher. How do we avoid, or what tips can we give the up-and-coming professional to not fall into a trap like some people that have been in business for so long?
Yeah, so I talk about, I've got a PDF labeled How to Move from Star Performer to Team Leader. And the idea is, as you're going from being that individual contributor that's the rock star example, top of your game, and moving to that next level, we have to distinguish between three skill sets for leaders. And I think we talked about this maybe when we had our just get to know each other conversation. This comes from a model from a gentleman named Katz from the 1950s, K-A-T-Z, the three-skill leadership model. And we say there are technical skills, which are essentially those skills that help you just get stuff done, crank stuff out the door. There are the human or relational skills that help you interact with human beings. And there are the cognitive skills, the conceptual skills you need, because there are thinking patterns that you've got to develop. The higher you go in the organization, the more important the relational and conceptual skills are. So, young leader, if you want to go the next step, focus your energy on developing relational and conceptual skills, and that will serve you well. Don't get in the trap of thinking, just because I got promoted because of my amazing technical skills, that's what I've got to continue to double down on. In that situation, it actually becomes a liability instead of a strength.
Can you unpack conceptual skills a little bit more? What does that mean to you?
Yeah, well, okay. Any kind of thinking skill is what we're talking about. And so even things as simple as time management, really, that's about awareness management. I can't really control time. And so it's about how I see my ability to see the big picture of the organization, to see the whole chessboard. That's a conceptual skill. Delegation actually is a conceptual skill as well. The ability to frame situations and understand which work goes where, to be able to understand the cost implications of how I'm spending my time. Those are all thinking skills that we can develop. They're also relational skills, by the way, because there's a lot of communication and negotiation that has to go on for delegation to work correctly. If you simply say, hey, I need you to get this done, you got a 50-50 shot at that it's actually going to happen.
But being able to describe it in terms of context, here's the big picture, then when you go to delegate, you're much more successful.
Exactly. Here's the why behind the what. Now let's agree to the how. That's both relational and conceptual work. And the other thing I want to throw out there is this idea of our cognitive biases. We often have these filters, and I'm wearing a pair of glasses, of course. People are listening to this, they can't see. But essentially, these cognitive filters are like a pair of glasses, lenses that will affect the way we receive information from the outside world. And so what can happen is in fact, I'm thinking of a coaching situation right now where someone's concerned that the person may not be the right fit for the spot. And so my follow-up is to say, okay, I need you for 3 months to withhold judgment on this, or we're not going to make any progress. If you are looking at this situation saying, I don't think this is the right person for the spot, no matter what I do with this person, no matter what this person accomplishes, you will filter out that positive information and only confirm your bias. Are you willing to do that? If not, we can't have the engagement.
Real powerful. I think a lot of people should pause and reflect on that because, again, we do bring our biases to situations. It's based on our history, what we know, and how we're programmed. But to simply have that awareness to be able to observe and evaluate a system or a person or a situation without bias, just observe and take in what they're doing, what you're seeing, input from other people, the lens that you look at them may be completely different. Your work has inspired a lot of people, but I'd love to know a little bit about, has there been anybody who's inspired you and how have they impacted you?
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I think about a guy named Daniel Wallace, who when I was 18 years old, I went to work at a summer camp. This guy was a camp director and he cared about me as a human being. I'd never seen leadership like that before. And I think that's part of what started me on this journey. You know, the people who really inspire me, golly, I think my family. And I know that's so trite and so, or potentially trite, but I've got two beautiful daughters. I've got a wonderful wife. You know, my wife has this gift for whoever's in front of her feels like the most important human being on the planet. I like that gift. I don't have the spiritual gift of hanging out. And so to see her do that and how it impacts people, it's inspiring. I think about, again, some of these leaders I work with who, I think of one in particular, who was willing to say, you know, the small business loan, I think there are other people that need it worse than me. I'm going to take money out of my pocket to make sure my employees have their basic needs met.
You know, I asked this question, and first of all, thank you for sharing that. I sometimes catch people off guard when I ask such a question, but you know, in my journey, I don't think I had many inspirational people. I've had great people, smart people that I've worked with. I've learned a lot of stuff from them. But when you think about people that inspire you, it could be just a moment in time or one thing they said or just simply believing in you. Those are the people that lift you, that inspire you, and again, don't make you do something, but light a spark from within or just lift your spirit. And so I always like to understand that either I'll gain some insights or I just love to see what impact this has had on them. So thank you so much for sharing that. So I want to kind of bring this to an end. You are a wealth of knowledge, expertise. Your book is amazing. I can't wait to finish it. You know, just want to give you an opportunity if there's any other thoughts or insights that you'd like to share before we bring this to a close.
Yeah, I think it would be to repeat some things we've spoken about. You know, one, the importance of awareness, that change starts with awareness. And so I would encourage leaders, make sure you have disciplines that help you with awareness. Make sure you have feedback loops that help you with that. The higher up in your organization, the harder it is for you to actually get good information because everybody's filtering what they send to you. I would also say, as you're making decisions, leader, it's so funny because vulnerability is all in the vogue right now, right? And I'm not, pardon my tone for that. I am not dismissing it. I'm a big believer in it as well. And I would like to think I've shown some of that here. The problem is, leader, when you choose to be vulnerable, you're going to get punched in the gut some. And so I want you to know it's okay. And I want you to say, or I want to say to you, when you know that's part of the deal and you choose to be vulnerable anyway, you're choosing the comic story because you're choosing a life that has community and doesn't end in isolation.
All right. Beautiful. This has been an amazing conversation. I so appreciate the fact we were kind of in the moment, went here, went there. It was very relaxing and very enjoyable. I know people are going to want to connect with you, learn more about your book, the work that you do. How best can they connect with you?
I think the simplest way to connect is stanleyjward.com. There's a contact form there. My social media links are there, as well as at Amazon, search for as an author, Stanley J. Ward, or simply search for the book, How to Beat Burnout for Yourself, Your Family, and Your Team. I also have a website that I'm redesigning. It's coachingforinfluence.com. That's my business site. Just understand, it is being redesigned. It looks dated. So don't judge me, please, on that site.
No worries at all. You're an amazing person, great person to listen to, have a fantastic conversation. Wish you continued success in your work. And thank you so much for a great interview.
And thank you, Deb, for just being open to the conversation. I really do appreciate it.
All right. Thank you. Be well.
You too.
Thank you for listening to the Drop-In CEO podcast. I hope you are inspired by our conversation and can apply what you heard to your business or career goals. For more information about our consulting or coaching services, please visit my website at dropinceo.com or visit our Drop-In CEO Facebook group to continue the conversation. Now go out, lead, inspire, and achieve your goals.